A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 24 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, and I want to thank so much our good friend Russ Cohen of Sportsology for once again making this platform available to us. We have a real thrill for all of you here tonight. We're welcoming back our greatest guest and bringing him back in for the fourth time, a chance to catch up with him. His beloved St. Louis Cardinals are in the World Series. We'll get to catch up with him about his animal advocacy and much more. A quick note before we do that. This has been, I would say, the saddest week in the almost five-year history of the FDH Lounge with what happened earlier in the week. We lost, to the best of my knowledge, the first one of our many guests that we've had on the program, and we did so in front of the world on Sunday, as everyone saw it. Dan Weldon, who was kind enough to come on with us in the aftermath of his stunning second Indianapolis 500 victory this year, taken in very horrifying fashion in that race on Sunday. And it's just been very, very heartbreaking to everybody in the FDH Lounge family, as well as Dan's other many friends and his family. And we just want to send our best wishes and our condolences to all who were even more directly affected than we were, especially his family, his friends, and everyone else involved. Our hearts are breaking along with everyone else. Dan was so kind to us, and it's the measure of a really class individual when they've achieved that kind of station in life and can be so kind and so gracious to other people still. So the logical segue, I suppose, from that is that describes our guest tonight perfectly. That same description, a very class individual, one of the greatest American legends, I would say, not just in broadcasting, but dare I say, in any field of life. It's been our pleasure to catch up with him a couple of times previously in the lounge, in May and September of 2009. In January of this year, he was our guest on our fourth anniversary edition, and tonight, as we start our countdown to the 500th hour in the history of the FDH Lounge, we're at 497. What better way to start our countdown than with an absolutely amazing guest who we've been privileged to speak to? We're so happy to have him on. It is my pleasure to be able to say for the fourth time, Bob Barker, come on down. Welcome to the FDH Lounge, sir. It's great to have you back in. How are you tonight, Bob?
Oh, I'm fine, and I'm better after that wonderful introduction. Thank you so much.
Well, it's our pleasure, sir. It's been great to be able to chat with you previously, and it's a real honor to be able to be a conduit. The public is very, very much interested in everything that's going on with you, with everything that you've tallied in your career, and it's been a couple of years now since The Price is Right, but that hasn't dampened people's enthusiasm for getting to hear what you're up to. Our senior producer, Steve Servillo, had reached out to your guy, Henry, here with the occasion of the World Series. We know you're a huge Cardinals fan. We know that you've been following this, and Bob, this has to be one of the great thrills for you the last several weeks, seeing all of this materialize. How unlikely everything was. That team looked like they were dead and buried and out of it, and what an incredible run it's been. What a thrill for all of you who follow the Cardinals.
You summed it up beautifully. I tell you, I had given up on them. I thought, well, let's start thinking about next year. And then they got hot at just the right time. Everybody started doing everything a little bit better at just the right time, and they got in there. And now I fully expect them to win the thing. I'm just delighted. Did I ever tell you, incidentally, how I became a Cardinal fan?
I don't think so. No, I'd love to hear about it.
Well, I lived up in South Dakota, but I used to go down and visit my grandmother in Springfield, Missouri during the summer times. I was just a kid. And they were the Springfield Cardinals were a farm club of the St. Louis Cardinals, and I was in the knothole gang. We got in the games free. I went to all the ball games, And I became a diehard Cardinal fan then. We saw, well, you remember Frank Crespi played shortstop. He was injured during World War II and didn't play after the war. And Mike Reba, he became a relief pitcher in the Cardinals. And Stan Musial himself came through. He was with the Springfield Cardinals for about 5 minutes, and then he went up to the big club. But I became a Cardinal fan, and I have a Busy Dean figure over my desk right here, and I have never given up on them, even during the bad years.
Well, you know what, Bob? For folks who aren't as much into the national pastime as you and I don't think it's commonly understood or appreciated these days that back before the Dodgers and the Giants moved west, the Cardinals had just an amazing network of followers out there. They had a radio network that stretched for many states. When they were the westernmost team, they had probably the strongest regional following of anybody, and you can still see echoes of it to these days. Cardinals fans who were spread far and wide.
You got it right. That was exactly the situation. People came from all over Oklahoma and Missouri. They went up to the ball games, and in Springfield there was a fellow named Lee George who recreated all of the road games. Those recreations were amazing, and they had fans all over the Midwest.
It's a truly incredible following that they've had, and they've been, I think most people would say, probably the most successful National League franchise if you look at the record book. For somebody like you, with your incredible history of following them and your perspectives of them over the decades, you know, we now come to what may be, hopefully isn't, but maybe the final games of Albert Pujols in a St. Louis Cardinal uniform. There have been some signs of hope in recent days that maybe they can get him re-signed. But for somebody like you, from your perspective, where does he rank with the other players you've seen, with a Stan Musial, with Bob Gibson, Ozzie Smith? When you're looking at the pantheon of Cardinals players, where does Albert Pujols rate?
There's no doubt that he rates right up there with the very best. No doubt at all. He has been the motor of that team for a good many years, and he's come alive again now. He's the old Pujols. And I love Pujols for two reasons. First of all, for his baseball, of course. But years ago, his wife came to the show. She came to the Price is Right, and I had a nice talk with her, and she was very complimentary about my work. And I told her I thought her husband was just one of the most, really a splendid baseball player, and he was young then, but he certainly splendid describes him. He's just top notch.
That's incredible that you got to meet her and get to tell her personally of your regard for him. As far as other great Cardinals over a period of time, I was thinking of you when I saw about the Hall of Fame induction for Whitey Herzog. Have you gotten a chance to catch up with him recently? I know that he's got to be thrilled by everything that's happening right now.
Well, I haven't seen Whitey in years, but I've told you my story about Whitey, haven't I?
You had a contract, didn't you?
Well, yes, I had talked about my loyalty to the Cardinals, and Whitey either heard it on radio or television or read it or something, and I was in St. Louis. I think I was doing a Miss Universe pageant, maybe, but in any event, he invited me out to the ballpark, and he gave me a jacket, a Cardinal jacket that I still wear, and he gave me a bag that I wore out going carrying it back and forth to the show, and he signed me to a contract. And because I'd always wanted to pitch for the Cardinals, he signed me a contract, and I got $1 a year from the Cardinals so long as I do not pitch. Don't even warm up. He said if you ever heard of me warming up, it was null and void.
That's outstanding. Well, it's great to see somebody like Whitey get the respect he deserves, and to make the Hall of Fame. What a great run those teams had in the 80s. And really, when you're looking at the last couple of decades, that's the run probably most comparable to what we've seen now, 2004, 2006.
Yeah,
2011. Tony La Russa is doing a great job, but he's just following in the footsteps of Whitey.
That's right. Whitey, I have a picture with Whitey that I prize. And of course, you're too young to have, I was just a kid myself, but the Gas House Gang, They were that was a great era for the Cardinals. The first T-shirt I ever owned in my life. I was just a little boy. It was a picture of Dizzy Dean and his brother Paul Daffy. They called him. Across it said "Me and Paul," because Dizzy Dean was always talking about what he and Paul were going to do, and "Me and Paul are going to do this. Me and Paul are going to do that." And I remember one time in a doubleheader, Jerome Herman, Dizzy Dean pitched a one-hitter in the first game, and in the second game, Paul, his brother, Daffy, he pitched a no-hitter. And Dizzy Dean said, "I didn't know Paul was going to do that, or I'd have pitched 1-2 a no-hitter."
Those teams had a lot of character and a lot of characters that were on them, definitely. And something that I just learned the other day, Bob, and I know I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. All the longtime Cardinal fans would know this, but I was researching some tidbits for a World Series column on our blog, and I came across this. It's very interesting. The Cardinals' pennants historically have always come in a clump. They haven't really been scattered like they've been for other teams, but you've got what's happened over the last 7 years. You've got what they did in the 80s. There was that run in the 60s and the early 40s, late 20s, early 30s. It's very interesting to me that they're not scattered over time, but whenever they win a pennant, you know they're going to win several more pennants and maybe World Series in the next couple of years.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but you're absolutely right. And I was thinking only the other day, I wonder if this could be the start of something for the Cardinals. I wasn't thinking of clumps, but they came alive so in the last part of this season that let's just hope it carries over for another year or two. It'd be great.
Well, all the pieces are in place, and I tell you what, you know, you were saying previously about, you know, having thought that this might not be the year, and I think most people had arrived at that same conclusion. You know, we go back, it's easy to forget now. We go back to spring training. Boy, where would this team be with Adam Wainwright? How do you lose your ace and still manage to have a run like this? It is truly incredible, Bob.
It is incredible. Lady Luck is with them, and they do have the skills, and it's working. And as I said, I fully expect them to win this thing. I really do.
So far, so good. One game down last night, a 1-0 lead in the World Series. And Chris Carpenter coming out and just looking sensational. Of course, he was the key to that huge upset in the first round against the Phillies. And, boy, when you've got Chris Carpenter on his game, that goes a long way to make up for not having Adam Wainwright, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And that play of his at first base, that was just a beautiful example of what television does for baseball. That close-up of him and the fact that he actually had his hand right in the center of the first base there, and the runner managed to miss his hand with his foot. The whole thing, they reran it. It's great what they can do to make the game more interesting, isn't it?
It really is, Bob. That's one of those plays. You know it when you see it. We're going to be seeing it for a long time to come. That's probably going to be like the shots of Curt Schilling with the bloody sock from the 2004 World Series.
That's right.
You know, we're gonna see that play for a long time to come. And I'll tell you what, too. I have to take my hat off to Elvis Andrews for not spiking his hand. I got to say, if that was Ty Cobb crossing first base, I think it might have been a different story.
Don't even think about it. He might not have a hand.
Well, good thing Elvis Andrews pulled up on that one and didn't look to intentionally injure him. But, yeah, it's been an amazing thing. I can't wait for game two tonight. I know you're fine.
Oh, I'm going to be right there at my television set. You bet your life. In our time, it's 3:15 here. It'll be another hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, it's going to be incredible. And you know, on a much different note here, Bob, since the time that we had set this up with you, other events in the world have come to pass, and clearly I was thinking about you all day yesterday, you being one of the preeminent animal rights people on the planet, really, these days. It's only about 2.5 hours south of where I'm at. We're based out of Ohio here in the Cleveland area. Down in Zanesville, that tragedy yesterday that we saw with the animals and the kind of really non-existent and shameful lack of oversight here in the state of Ohio that leads to something like this. Clearly, those are the type of issues you've been campaigning about for a couple of decades now, but the better treatment of animals, and it's just a shame that the way that the laws were not constructed here in this state, it leads to a situation like that. They get on the loose, and authorities have to do what they have to do to protect the people. It was just terrible.
Well, it was a tragedy, just as you've said, and there's some interesting sidelights to this. Well, one thing, let us hope that the enormity of this tragedy will cause the states that do not have laws or do not have adequate laws about wild animals, that they do something about it. These collectors, as this man was, he had 56 animals. 49 of them were killed. The others ended up in zoos. The enormity of this brings the attention required to do something about it and prevent something like this. Now, they're lucky that someone or several people weren't killed, because with these wild animals running all over the area, it could have happened so easily. And 25 of our 50 states have no laws regarding collecting wild animals, or inadequate laws. And those 25 states have got to do something about it, or there are going to be more animals killed and more deaths of human beings. And Ohio is one of the four worst states in the entire country so far as animal law for wild animals, that is. Ohio, Oklahoma and Missouri and Nevada are the four bottom of the whole bell. And let's hope that this will cause people to start demanding protection. And another thing that's interesting, this fellow, among his 56 animals, he had orangutans, he had cheetahs, and he had chimpanzees. Now, most collectors can't get their hands on them. Where did this guy get them? I know that Ed Stewart and Pat Derby of the Paws Sanctuary are going to go after it, and they're going to find out where he got them, and they're going to follow the paper trail right back to where he actually laid his hands on them. Did he buy them from a zoo? That zoo will be in trouble if he did. Did he get them from an illegal breeder? Let's hope they get him if he did. But it was just an appalling thing.
Well, I hadn't heard that last part, Bob, but this is good stuff. You've always been good about educating the public on these types of issues, so this is very interesting to draw this out from you because, again, like you said, a very shameful lack of oversight in this state. It's very surreal to see the state that I live in atop all of the international news headlines yesterday. Everybody's talking about some whack job from Ohio who has caused this to happen and what a terrible tragedy it was. And for when you see somebody like Jack Hanna, who very much like yourself is associated in the public mind with the well-being of animals, as emotional as he was about this yesterday, it was just very striking to see, and very, very painful to see somebody who's devoted his life to the welfare of animals down there on the scene. I mean, this was a very, very vivid thing for anybody who loves animals.
Well, animal rights activists all over the country have been trying to get the attention of the federal government and the state governments about this animal collection. The people, they think, oh, this cute little lion cub, I've just got to have it. And then that lion becomes a 250, 300-pound lion, and they don't feed them properly. Most of these collectors, the animals are kept in terrible conditions. They're housed in tiny enclosures, have nothing resembling the life that nature intended for them. They're not fed properly in many cases, and in many cases they're ill and not getting proper medical attention. In fact, Pat Derby told me that up there at the sanctuary, that some of the saddest, most pitiful situations that they have, animals that have been brought in, have come from these collectors.
It's amazing that they've been allowed to proliferate as they have in this state. I've actually seen billboards driving that stretch of Interstate 70 going near Zanesville for sanctuaries. I believe the ones that are being advertised are open to the public, but it's always just kind of made me amazed that such things essentially do exist here. And again, it seems like a classic example of taking care of something when it's too late. It does seem as though there are going to be laws passed. The governor of this state, I guess, has been shamed into action, however belatedly at this point. But it does seem as though, if there's any bright spot whatsoever in all of this, Bob, it does seem as though the example of this is going to shame just about all other places, Ohio and the other three states you mentioned, into compliance with essentially basic decency here and taking care of animals and not allowing such an incident to repeat itself.
Well, I certainly hope so. I'm delighted that you think something's going to happen in Ohio. I mentioned Missouri. I went to high school and college in Missouri, and I have a lot of friends in Missouri. I wrote to newspapers and did interviews during that fight for the legislation that would have really clamped down on puppy mills. You know, Missouri is known as the puppy mill capital of the country, and these puppy mills are horrendous. And we got the thing passed, and then called a Proposition B. They got Proposition B passed, and then after the election, the new legislators repealed the bill, and so now puppy mills are thriving there again, and worse, the protection is not as adequate as it was. They've got it now, it's worse than ever. And they found out that one of the legislators who was elected and came in and really pushed to repeal Proposition B, his mother owns one of the largest puppy mills in the state, and it's ranked right at the very bottom. Now, how do you like that? Is that disgusting?
I have to say, that's not too surprising, because just some conversations that we've had internally since this happened yesterday, Bob, we wondered if there was any kind of money trail here in Ohio that led to this, because the outgoing governor had signed some protections into the law that the new governor ended up reversing. So, yeah, nothing like that surprises me, I have to say, when you find some kind of financial reason for decisions being made or not made.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably true in government all over the country and in the federal government as well.
Very, very sad. Well, you know, this ties in also. Bob, we've done a little bit of research here before you came on. We noted this issue with the elephant Lucy in Canada that you've been campaigning to get that elephant better taken care of. And I understand you did an interview with Canadian television recently. Can you give us an update on the situation there and whether or not she's going to be treated as she deserves?
Well, first of all, the people of Edmonton, I think a majority of them want that poor elephant out of there. They realize that she's suffering up there in the cold, and she's not well, and she's not going to get any better. And the zoo, for some reason, and the city, it begins with the mayor. I don't know whether the councilmen are all under his thumb or what, but they won't speak up either. Everybody has just joined together to torture this poor elephant, and she has some sort of a respiratory problem. They brought in a so-called expert, a veterinarian for whom we have no respect whatsoever here in California. He's out here, and they brought him back there, and he looked her over and said that it was a serious situation and one that he had never seen before. Didn't know what to do with it, but they were going to try a few things. Well, they tried a few things, and she's no better. And we kept after them to get further examination, and what they did was to call the same doctor back, and again he said that she was still ill and not well, but he didn't know for sure what to do. And the veterinarian who is taking care of her regularly up there at Edmonton, he admitted to me that he's a cat and dog doctor. And I said, well, how many elephants have you treated? And he said, only Lucy. So he's sitting up there getting on-the-job training at the expense of Lucy's health. Now, PETA went so far as to finally, they went to court, and lost the case. There were three judges, and the chief judge, though, wrote a beautiful idea of what they should do. And she was on the side of Lucy. She was the side of getting Lucy out of Canada. The other two said, no, no, we are going to keep them in Canada. So now they have appealed that, and we're using her testimony, the chief judge's testimony, in the suit, and we're going to try to get her out on a legal basis, because we can't get her out just because the people in the government, they're just completely obdurate. They won't even talk about it. I mean, I tell you what I did. I offered the city of Edmonton $100,000. $100,000 to do with whatever they wanted to. If they wanted to improve conditions at the zoo, they could do that. If they wanted a park, they could do that. Whatever they wanted to do. If they would allow us to get a half dozen really experts doctors on elephants, specialists on elephants, we'd get a half dozen and pay the doctors and pay their expenses to go up there and examine Lucy, and they would refuse to do it. They wouldn't do it. Now, that's the kind of people we're dealing with there.
Wow. I mean, you have to question the motivations of folks who won't do it even under those circumstances.
How about
you're trying to take care of everything for them. That really is something. In our remaining 2 to 3 minutes that we have still allotted here, Bob, we always like to give our guests a chance to plug what's going on. I know we've talked about previously, you've got the anti-whaling boat that's out there taking care of business, and you're doing a lot of work with PETA and some of these other groups here. So please, anything else you want to get across to the people, take this opportunity.
Well, I just did an interview with the Insider, the television show Insider, on this situation that we've been talking about, these poor wild animals that have been slaughtered up there in Ohio. And that will play tonight on the Insider. And I'm going back to Washington, D.C., on November 2nd, I'm going to be there and speak at a big press conference they have set up, and then go to several of the senators and congressmen and lobby a new bill. And this bill will end using elephants in circuses, traveling circuses, or traveling shows of any kind. The elephants are just, it's torture for them to go through. We don't have the time for all the details of what happens with these elephants in circuses, but it's heartbreaking. And if we could stop them from using elephants in traveling shows and of any kind, it would be a great step. So I'm going back and do that. And that's what I have right now on the horizon anyway, so far as animal work is concerned. But there's always something, you know that.
Absolutely. And as I said at the outset here, it's our honor and pleasure to be able to serve as a conduit and through our show be able to keep the public abreast of things with you. We're so grateful to you for being such a great friend of our show, a dignitary emeritus of the FDH Lounge, if you will. We thank you so much, Bob, and we look forward to doing it again here at some point. God bless, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's a pleasure for me. You just tell old Steve to call us anytime you want.
Thank you very much, Bob. Bob Barker, everybody. We're so happy to have him in to the FDH Lounge here tonight, mini episode number 24. Thanks so much to Bob Barker. We'll catch you soon, the FDH Lounge at thefdhlounge.com.